You're listening to the Full Contact Fighter Radio Network.
Hey guys, this is Dennis Kang. Hey,
this is Mr. Cripples, a.k.a. the Cat Smasher.
Hey, this is John the Natural Alessio.
Hey, this is Rashad Evans.
Hey guys, this is the Big Frog, Jeff Curran.
Hey, this is Mac Danzig.
Hey guys, this is Jason Anthony McDonald.
Hi, this is Ivan Salvage.
Hey everybody, this is Joe Peltier, Jay Dirksen.
Hey, it's Mark Machine Hunting here.
Hey everybody, you are listening to the world's most handsome fighter on the planet. Yes, this is Al Guapo, and you are listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio with Kelsey Mowat.
Amidst a torrential downpour in Vancouver, British Columbia, still managing to get out another episode of Full Contact Fighter Radio. I'm your host, Kelsey Mullen, and joining me now from Edmonton is Brendan Lear.
It's raining there?
Dude, it's... I'm sure you've heard it. It's seen on the news, perhaps. I don't know if you keep up on the news, but...
Yeah, I don't watch the news.
It's quite the storm hitting the West Coast right now. Setting a record, apparently, for rain, amount of rain in November out here, or something like that.
And yet, amidst the rain, your bed bugs continue to thrive.
Yes, the bed bug epidemic, the torrential downpours, perhaps it is indeed the apocalypse. The apocalypse is nigh, I fear.
Dude, look out for the frogs. I guess you really don't have a firstborn, so you're good there. Yeah, just watch out for the frogs.
Maybe something very cataclysmic is going to happen at UFC 65, and these are supposed to be some kind of signs or something that...
That's my prediction.
Yeah, it's going to be a big weekend for circumstances that are kind of out of my hand. This will be the only show we'll be able to do this week, up until UFC 65, so we'll be doing our predictions at the end. So I'm trying to make the show as packed as possible, buddy. We've got Dennis Kang coming on the show, we've got Scott Smith coming on the show, and then also Matt Fiordorosa from Team Curran will be on the program as well. So we've got three guests, and yeah, it'll be interesting to talk to all those guys, and Scott Smith, of course, coming off the knockout of the century. I mean, maybe it's exaggerating a little bit, but that knockout was crazy.
Did you get any more action-packed in one show? I don't think so.
Yeah. All right, well, let's get to it. You're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio.
Some things are worth fighting for. 14 American mixed martial artists will battle in the jungles of Costa Rica. 7 will earn the right to fight the Russian Red Devil Team in front of the world, live on pay-per-view. Only they know what this fight means to them, and they'll get their chance to prove it on Bodog Fight. The fight begins September 19th. Check local listings or visit BodogFight.com for more details.
Joining Full Contact Fighter Radio now is Mr. Dennis Kang, and Dennis, you have once again creeped into the annals of FCF history by becoming the third-time guest ever, buddy.
I'm glad to be here, man. My pleasure.
It didn't really sound that enthused about the fact the third time, man. That's quite the honor.
Just because Joe Judge got back from about 30 hours of traveling.
Yeah, your traveling week last week was nuts. In case people maybe didn't notice you were in the corner of Dean Thomas. And that was my
McCarthy, yeah.
Yeah, that was going to be my first question for you. What were those fights like, ATT perspective? Pretty big up on you for getting back and going straight to corner those guys at the Ultimate Fighter finale.
Yeah, well, those guys would have been there for me, so I'm always there for them. And as far as the fights went, everybody did really well. You know, everybody fought exactly according to what we had planned. Charles McCarthy, got a beautiful submission. And, Dean Thomas just outboxed Rich Clemente. So it was a good night. We went 2-0 that night.
We had Dean Thomas on the program a couple weeks ago, and I told Brendan, and he was in agreement with me, that guy, I mean, at least from our brief discussion with him, he seemed like a really, really nice guy, and his interview was one of the better interviews we've done on this program. He just, he calls it like he sees it.
Yeah, exactly. He's a colorful character.
Now, going back to the main reason we're having you on the program is the Pride Bushido Welterweight Grand Prix. My first question for you is, what are your thoughts on the Gono fight? You got the unanimous decision victory. How did that fight play out for you? I didn't have a chance to see it. Unfortunately, I only saw your fight with Misaki. What are your thoughts looking back on the Gono fight, and then we'll get into the Misaki fight in a minute?
I think the fight went well. It's exactly what I planned to do, is kind of hit him from the outside, and then if it went to the ground, just keep the top position and try to hurt him with some punches and knees. Going back into it, I think I would be a little bit more aggressive, and because I think than the injury I suffered in that fight, you know. And then the Mizaki fight, you know, I did the best that I could. My plan was to get in there and take him down and beat him up on the ground and then look for a submission in the end, you know. But unfortunately, my injury played a little bit, and then I got a little tired later on in the fight, probably because of the first fight.
Yeah, and I was going to ask you about that. What is the diagnosis on the injury? For people who maybe didn't know, it looked like you had an arm injury, shoulder injury.
Yeah, I got a torn bicep at the top of the bicep, and I went and got an MRI last week. I've got an appointment with the doctor on Wednesday for him to give me the results of the MRI. So as far as we know so far, is that's all that we know. It's just a torn bicep. He said I don't need surgery, which is good news.
So there's no...
exactly on Wednesday, what's going on.
No preliminary discussions at this point on how long you might be out for?
No. I know for sure I'm taking the rest of the year off.
Yeah.
And then I'll probably be back in first quarter of next year, I believe.
Now, when you're getting ready for the fight with Gono, were you aware? Did you get the chance? Did you watch the Paulo Filho fight live? Did you see his armbar submission of Misaki, or did you watch it after the fight?
Yeah, I did.
What was that like for you mentally going in? I mean, knowing that you, of course, when did you find out that Paulo wasn't going to be able to continue? And what were your thoughts seeing the fact that he ended the fight and maybe it was going to be a little bit fresher than you, although it was almost at the 10-minute mark?
Yeah, man, I was fully ready for Paulo Filho. I only found out, I was actually getting ready to walk out for him, and then it told me about, you know, I think when the Marcus Cerezo fight was still happening, which was the fight just before me, then they told me that I wasn't fighting him, you know. So only about 15 minutes before walking out did I find out that Filho was out. So, it kind of surprised me a little bit, but there wasn't that much of a game plan to change. I mean, I'm good at adapting to different opponents, so all I had to do was, instead of staying off the ground, I just had to bring this one to the ground, you know.
From watching that fight against Misaki, you know, the guy just shows unbelievable heart, and I think, you know, for some people who've only seen him maybe compete mostly against, you know, someone like Dan Henderson, or at least show that same kind of fire that he did against you, for someone who had watched him compete against Henderson, he obviously beat Henderson once, gave him a ton of trouble in their first fight.
Yeah.
When you look at Misaki as a fighter now, he doesn't have necessarily a record that jumps out and grabs you, but most of his losses have come against world-class fighters.
Yeah.
When you look back on his performance now, having taken him on, was he, I mean, you, I know you told us on the show that you weren't going to overlook him at all. Where would you put him, in, let's say, in the top 10, top 5? Is he right up there as far as fighters, caliber fighters?
Absolutely. I think what he's done this year speaks for itself, you know. I mean, he won the Grand Prix, he beat Henderson in the process. That's a huge jump in the rankings right there. I don't think it's my place to say exactly where he ranks, but I think you could definitely put him in the top 10, you know, even in the top half of that. So, I think, you know, he's a real, real stubborn and tough competitor. You know, he's coming out there to bang, he's always moving forward, and he's got a great chin. And I think those are his best weapons.
And comparatively, his power to Gono, much, much more powerful in the strikes?
Yeah, he hits a little bit harder than Gono, for sure.
Yeah. Now, I wanted to ask you, going into this, it's you know, well documented by now, Shelby's passing, your fiancé. Dennis, I think people are wanted to, your fans and observers of MMA want to know, did the thought of ever not competing in this tournament, considering the circumstances in your personal life, ever enter into your mind?
No, really. I mean, I was back training for it the day after everything happened. I think I kind of had to, just to keep myself busy, you know, and keep myself mentally sane. But it didn't really, it sort of creeped in a little bit. I don't think I made any decisions, you know, I knew better than to do that, but I was just kind of confused as to what I was going to do now, really, and how it would affect me, you know, with my training and my performance and stuff like that. So, but if anything, it made my training even more intense.
Well, I think two different types of people out there, and some people need to step away from what they're doing in their lives when tragedy, you know, comes into their life, and then there's other people who like to immerse themselves in their work and just move forward,
yeah.
You know, and that's what works for some people.
Yeah, that's right.
Now looking ahead to what's in store for Pride, there's, you know, some fans grumbling out there as far as whether or not what's going to go on. Is Misaki going to get the title shot against Henderson? We're saying, well, does he deserve it because Henderson, Paulo Filho defeated him?
Yeah.
Do you have any opinion on that matter, Dennis? Have you even heard any speculation yourself from maybe within the Pride organization what they might try to do next as far as Dan Henderson's title?
No, I haven't really heard anything. I just know that it would be their third fight, so maybe Brad might be a little bit hesitant to put on a third one. But as far as him deserving it, I mean, he won the tournament. You know, even though he lost in the first round, the alternate, Musashi, who won his alternate match, was injured as well, so he could not keep going. Mm-hmm. You know. Okay. So he's going to have to do it. But I think he's deserving of the match. Maybe I'm just saying that because I want the winner.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you next, is do you have any kind of inkling? You, when we've talked to you prior, you always seem to have a fairly good prediction of what Pride, who Pride was going to line you up against next, etc. Do you have any inkling on what they're going to do with you next? Obviously, you're going
to
return from this.
I think it's safe to say that I'll be getting the winner of whoever Mizaki fights next.
Yeah.
You know, it's not 100% sure, but it's what I've heard through the grapevine.
Okay. And you don't... No, there's been no speculation as from what you've heard in regards to Paulo Filho.
No, I haven't heard anything about. I guess it depends on his injury as well.
Yeah, this is your first loss since February of 2003 against Jason Miller, I believe. And you know, from doing the show or just talking to fighters for stories for the paper, etc. You know, guys that go on these crazy long winning streaks. Some of them have even told me that when they finally lose, it's almost a sense of relief. You know, just because it's become so, there's so much pressure in the sport of mixed martial arts, there's so many ways to lose. How do you look at it now? I mean, you were looking at this is like almost 4 years since you last lost your fight.
Yeah.
Fight.
No, I don't get the sense of relief at all, but I mean, I'm not that disappointed either because it's, you know, I fought 100%. You know, I gave everything I had and, I learned a lot from both those matches that night. I mean, I don't think it gets much harder than that, you know, 2 15-minute fights in one night. So, I mean, all in all, I think I came out a better fighter after those two fights, and that's the way I'm looking at it. You know, I could go and be disappointed and be all bitter, say that I got robbed and all this stuff, but it's not going to change anything. What happened, happened, so I might as well just move on and learn from it.
Well, I wanted to ask you because, you know, you compete at 183 pounds, and we like to sort of, especially guys who fight in the same weight class, we haven't had a chance to have you on the show since Rich Franklin lost his title to Anderson Silva. And I just wanted to ask you, first off, what were your thoughts on that, and what do you think of Travis Luter's chances against Anderson Silva now that he looks like he'll be next in line?
Yeah. I think maybe Rich Franklin didn't really look himself up. I don't know if something personal, maybe something physical, I don't know, but he looked a little out of it even before the fight even started. And Anderson Silva, I mean, what can I say? The guy's just all skill, you know. He just came out and took him apart with those knees from the clinch and played right into his game, you know, and looked great doing it. As far as Travis Luter, I think if anybody can beat him right now in the UFC middleweight, that's Travis Luter because of his ground. He's got to bring him down on the ground. But Travis' takedowns are, you know, they're good and they're strong. But I think he needs to set him up more with some punches to make it seem less mechanical. You know, Anderson Silva's going to see right through that. But if it does go to the ground, it's Travis all the way.
Well, that's the thing. Like, Brent and I were discussing this, and I think there's somewhat, and I'd like to hear your opinion, there's somewhat of an unknown factor in the sense that Anderson Silva, no one's really seen him go to the ground much in the last couple of years, and from the sounds of it, he's really improved his game. He got his black belt from the Nogueira brothers, so it will be interesting to see where he's actually at. I think some people maybe are remembering his performances against Seiya Tasaki, you know, where he didn't look so good on the ground, but some of those fights where he didn't look so hot, I mean, we're talking 2-3 years ago.
Yeah, that's right. No, so he's probably of course he's improved, you know. I mean, you can tell he's an intelligent athlete, so he'd be working on his ground to make himself a better fighter. So, I mean, we're going to have to see. I still don't think his stand-up is going to be as good as Luter's. But then again, Luter's been improving his stand-up as well, you know.
And then you've got the Matt Hughes versus George St. Pierre coming up, and you being a fellow Canadian. I think there's a lot of people who are really interested in that fight. And it's kind of nice to see from my perspective up here, it's quite rare up here in Canada where we get this much hype about a UFC fight.
I'm going with St. Pierre all the way.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that it's time for some new blood, and I think George is just to give that blood infusion. And I think his skill, his overall athleticism and skill is going to be too much for Hughes, you know. Especially now that he's got a lot more confidence and experience under his belt.
Yeah. Well, when you look back at the Hughes performance against BJ Penn, and now it has come out that, that BJ was injured, and of course injuries are part of the fight game, so you can't use that too much as an excuse, but I think you have to look at that and say, well, you know, BJ Penn appeared to be that he was on the verge of victory, but then on the other hand, you know, Matt Hughes, got to give him credit. The guy just never seems to mentally break in a fight.
That's right. No, you can't take that away from him. Matt Hughes is the ultimate competitor. You know, when it comes to things like that, with the mental domination and perseverance, I mean, you cannot beat the guy down. He'll never quit. So you're really going to have to put them in with the same mindset as him, and you're also going to have to beat him on the physical side with superior conditioning and skill.
And then you've got another one of your training partners. It seems like every major card, there's just so many American Top Team guys, but you've got Jeff Munson against Tim Sylvia, and I know you're probably going to go with Jeff because he is one of your training partners, but maybe break down on why you think Jeff's going to be able to, I'm assuming you're predicting that Jeff's going to be able to take Tim down and win the fight from the ground.
Yeah, I think he's going to take Tim down and beat him there. But, man, Jeff's been working on some secret stand-up technique as well. Yeah, maybe not secret stand-up technique. He's just been working his stand-up a lot, you know, working with some good boxers. And he's going against pro boxers and kickboxers and looking real, real good. So I think it doesn't have to go to the ground if he doesn't want to, you know. It would be easier for him to do it like that.
Yeah.
But he's going to be ready for any exchange on the feet with Tim Sylvia. Now, one other thing he's been doing is working on his conditioning. So I think that with that help right there, I think he's ready to go five rounds full out.
And then my last question for you is, you mentioned it earlier, and then I just forgot to follow it up. Marcus Aurelio versus Takanori Gomi. What are your thoughts looking back on that fight? I mean, do you guys think that he had done enough to win the fight? And what was kind of the game plan going in? It seemed, you know, he got him down, I believe, at the end of the first round. It looked like he might even have Gomi in some trouble. And then
the plan was more to let Gomi come back, you know, and so he could walk into something, just like last time.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, I think Gomi had kind of the same plan, so they kind of canceled each other out. I think that Gomi did just enough not to lose the fight, but I don't think he really won it either. You know, it should have been a draw. So, but it's kind of hard to give a draw in a title fight, so I understand the way they gave it. I think in a rematch, Marcus Aurelio would take it and submit him this time. You know, he's gone the distance with him now. So.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see what they do with Gomi next. Well, Dennis, we appreciate coming on the show. You should go get some rest, man, and I know you've been doing a ton of traveling the last couple of weeks, so.
Too much.
Yeah. Go get your arm checked out, and hopefully that's okay, and get some rest.
All right, man, I will.
Okay. The best stuff for MMA clothing is definitely the Full Contact Fighter shop, because with FCF gear, you don't have to be a champion to dress like one. Go check it out by now. I know you've seen it, that classic FCF logo on so many great items like our classic t-shirts, tricot jackets. We've got new high-quality rash guards, plus the NXP Extreme Fight shorts, which are available in red, black, navy, or camo. Of course, don't forget about our fantastic FCF hoodies, a variety of NHB corduroy and distress wash hats, plus now open is the FCF sticker and banner shop. We've got a wide assortment of International Fight League merch, all your favorite teams there. Just head to www.fcfighter.com or call 516-676-0033. That number again is 516-676-0033.
This is Ivan Salivary with Full Contact Fighter Radio with Kelsey Mowat.
Joining Full Contact Fighter Radio now is Scott Smith, Hands of Steel, coming off a huge win over Pete Sell last weekend. Scott, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. Good to be here.
You know, Scott, I guess the immediate question for you is, are you fully prepared now for forever being remembered, or your highlight reel knockout of Pete Sell? I mean, that thing, man, is going to be shown over and over and over again. You very well might be remembered for that punch for the rest of your life. Are you you prepared for that?
Yeah, I'm just now starting to realize how big it was. You know, of course, even if, you know, after UFC when I got the knockout, I realized it was big. Any win in the UFC is big, but the last couple of days, I mean, my life is literally changing already. You know, it's just phone calls left and right, people contacting me, and, you know, it's, I don't mind it, but yeah, I'm just now starting to realize how big it was for me.
Mm. Well, I know Joe Rogan asked you afterwards, you know, how badly were you hurt? Were you playing possum a little bit? And of course, you said you were pretty hurt. Now, a few days removed from the punch to the ribs, what is the condition? Nothing was broken, you're okay?
Yeah, nothing's broken. I don't have even have a bruise. It just caught me in the right spot to knock the wind out of me. You know, when you're breathing hard like that in the fight, that's about 8 minutes in the fight. You know, you're taking a breath in, or you take a breath at the wrong time to get punched. Simultaneously, it's pretty painful. It'll knock the wind out of you.
Was it just a completely instinctual reaction? I mean, when you're in that much pain and you saw him coming, do you even remember being cognizant of the fact that his hands are down, he's coming in on you, or was it just, you know, turning around and throwing that big right hand?
You know, what's weird is I do, you know, remember the moment of, you know, you get hit and you don't want to show your hurt. You know, I kind of bent over and I went to kind of stand back up, I remember, and my body wouldn't let me, and I bent over and we're separated quite a bit, and I'm thinking, I gotta hurry and recover. You know, this guy's coming in to kill me, and he didn't waste any time coming in. And I was just like, I basically threw the punch to protect myself. But, you know, I wasn't playing possum or anything. It's like, I got one more in me, and then I'm done, because I wasn't breathing. It still took me a solid minute to get my breath back. So it was kind of a survival mode is what it was.
You guys at Capital City Alliance, you and James Irvin in particular, are well-renowned strikers. I think it's safe to say that the school is very well-known, associated with Fairtex, for producing striker, top-flight striker kind of fighters like yourself. And then when you look at someone like Pete Sell, who comes from a very accomplished background in jiu-jitsu, were you somewhat surprised that it seemed that he didn't really try to take you down too much, or was it just a matter of, you know, you were connecting early and he just got flustered and he just didn't have the opportunity to take you down?
Yeah, you know, a lot of people ask me, are you sure he's not going to try to take you to the ground? I would have put, you know, a bunch of money on the fact that he was going to stand and trade with me. We were on the same show, remember, or the same team on the comeback show. So I'm actually, my background is wrestling. I'm a pretty established wrestler. I took fourth in state junior college. And I would say, besides Travis Luter, I was hands down the best wrestler on the show. Well, Pete Sell trained with me a lot, and he couldn't take me down on the show. I mean, he was getting real frustrated, and actually I could take him down pretty much at will. So I knew he wasn't going to waste any energy trying to take me down, because, you know, that's basically what he was doing. And, you know, he's a pretty confident guy with his hands. So I knew that's how the fight would go. I knew he wasn't going to try to take me down. If he did try to, even at that, if he did get me down, his jiu-jitsu is good, but we were pretty stalemate on the ground, so it would have been pointless for him to get me to the ground.
Yeah, that kind of leads into my next question, because we had James Irvin on the program last week, and he said that, you know, he felt a lot of people didn't give you the credit that you deserve for your ground game, in particular your wrestling, your takedown defense. Do you still find that? I mean, based on your loss in the Ultimate Fighter show, do you think people don't give you enough credit for the fact that you do have a strong wrestling and grappling kind of background?
Yeah, I definitely see people don't give me credit. It's kind of funny. I think it's going to work to my advantage here, especially the next few fights. They're going to be wanting to set me up with a guy to strike, which is fine for me, but I'll have no problem if I'm hurt in a fight taking somebody down, so, and people aren't going to expect it. So it's good for me in a way, but, you know, when I first started fighting, my first 8 fights were pretty much by taking people down and ground and pounding a couple submissions, and, you know, people would question how my hands were. And it was like the exact opposite situation. You know, the guys I was training with, they're like, man, actually, Scott's got pretty good hands. He just doesn't get a show in the fight. So I'm like in the reverse role now. And I think it's going to work to my advantage.
Now, you mentioned that you guys are on the same team on the show, and it was clear in your actual fight that you guys had become friends, you know, you were hugging and high-fiving each other. I mean, even that, outside of the knockout, is probably going to be remembered. I mean, you don't see too many fights where the guys are actually high-fiving each other, etc. But, I mean, tell us a little bit about that. Were you and Pete fairly became pretty close friends due to the show?
Yeah, me and Pete did become pretty good friends on the show, and even after the show, we kept in contact, and we talked even as early as, you know, the day we found out we were fighting each other. And it's kind of funny, we kind of made a promise to each other we were going to have the fight of the night. We're like, man, let's get into this 15 minutes of business, and, you know, let's get that fight of the night. And, you know, and I think that's why it was such an exciting fight. It's kind of a respect thing we had for each other. And if we went in there and danced around, you know, I don't think we're respecting each other. We got to go out there and beat each other up. That's what we're getting paid to do. And, you know, even right after the fight, we were at the after party together, hanging out, having fun. So it was just 15 minutes of business.
You know, you've come out of the Ultimate Fighter experience. We've had a few of you guys on the show, whether from this season or prior seasons. And we always kind of like to ask the fighters themselves. I mean, once you actually watch the episodes, Is it the way you remember things? How much of the editing process is involved, Scott, in contrast to what you actually experienced there?
It was pretty true to what you saw on TV. The one thing I was a little disappointed was, I guess I should say disappointed, but I think they spent a little too much time reviewing our past USC fights and stuff like that. There was some real, real good reality around the house and training and stuff like that, and I think I'm kind of disappointed they didn't show a lot of that stuff. I mean, like the stuff, the last episode, we're getting the water dump on the head, the food fight. They started showing stuff like that at the end, but there was some great reality that whole, like, you know, the whole experience, and I wish they would have showed a little more of that.
Now, we had Dean Thomas on the program, and we were asking him about his thoughts on Matt Hughes. Clearly on the show, he made some opinions about Matt Hughes, and then we asked him about after the fact, and he still said he hadn't really changed his opinion about Matt Hughes. And then when it came to the middleweights, there seemed like some of the guys were a little disappointed with Rich Franklin. They didn't think that he was there so much to help coach, maybe scoping out the other fighters he might possibly face. Of course, at the time, he was still the champ. Scott, when you look back on the experience with Rich, do you have those kind of same kind of outlook on Rich, or is it somewhat different than perhaps the way he was depicted on the show?
You know what I think the whole thing with Rich Franklin is, he was the coach on season 2, and he didn't get any of the airtime. It was all about Matt Hughes. Matt Hughes went in there being real arrogant, and I think he stole the show. And I think, Rich Franklin's a nice guy, and he comes back onto our season, and I think he wanted to kind of change his attitude a little bit, show that he's not just this nice guy. And turned out to be a dick, and that's just not how he is. So, I was kind of disappointed in Rich Franklin. I didn't care for him too much. He was there. He couldn't train with us, couldn't work out with us, couldn't even hold message or nothing. He was basically there for himself. And I just didn't like his attitude at all.
Well, we asked Dean Thomas in particular. There was an episode where he was, kind of telling George St. Pierre that he didn't really care for the way Matt was talking to George. And, in light of George's comments in the post Matt Hughes BJ Penn fight, George St. Pierre said wasn't impressed with Matt's performance, and Matt Hughes was quite, taken back by those comments, etc. And Dean Thomas basically said that from what he experienced, it wasn't just editing. Hughes wasn't really giving George much experience, much respect at the show. Was that your kind of take on it as well, or were you really around the welterweights enough to make it?
I did see it. He was pretty disrespectful toward George St. Pierre. And I think part of it is, and George St. Pierre will admit to you, that he's kind of a head case. He tells me that every fight he goes into, even still, he says to himself, he's like, what am I doing here? And then, of course, afterwards, oh, that was awesome. I love it. I want to do it again right now, kind of like a lot of guys do. And I think Matt Hughes knows that, and I think he wants to get in his head and intimidate him a little bit. And so I think, Matt Hughes knows that George St. Pierre is a real threat to himself. So yeah. I think he's trying to get in his head.
And you got a prediction on that fight, Scott?
Well, Matt Hughes is an excellent wrestler, obviously the most dominant welterweight ever, but I'm real impressed with George St. Pierre. Now, I don't know if it's because I'm a big fan of his, but I'm picking him to upset Matt Hughes.
Okay.
So I just think guys like George St. Pierre and BJ Penn match up bad for a guy like Matt Hughes. So I see St. Pierre winning this fight.
Well, let's just get back to your career just quickly here. You had the controversial loss to David Terrell, the referee. You thought that he was calling for a break, or he was calling for a break, and then you were submitted. Do you feel that this last performance vindicated you somewhat? I mean, how much of that loss to David Terrell and the controversy behind it still, bears on your mind, or is it something that you've just chosen to forget and move on?
No, I've kind of forgot about the David Terrell fight, and in all reality, it's worked out better for me. If I didn't lose to David Terrell, I wouldn't have made it, to the Ultimate Fighter 4, the comeback show. And everything's unfolding great for me. I mean, I'm given another opportunity, and that's what I wanted. But I did feel a little added pressure going into that fight to go out there and perform and actually show that I can fight like I did. And especially not only coming off the David Terrell loss, but Travis Uda was even a bigger disappointment going out. I mean, I showed absolutely nothing in that fight. And I was prepared. That was the most prepared I've ever been for a fight. I was in the best shape of my life on that show. And I'd have done the same thing again, fight Travis Uda again. But I had a lot of pressure going in there and having a good, exciting fight. That's how I need to continue to fight.
Well, Well, when you guys were there, I mean, was there some general consensus as far as some of you fighters who had been eliminated? Did a lot of you guys, were you picking Travis Luter to go all the way? Were you surprised at all the way he seemed like he'd easily beat Patrick Cote?
No, that's exactly how I saw the fight. You know, people had me analyze the fight before, and I told them that pretty much what's going to happen. Travis Luter would pressure him to the cage, slowly drag him down, and find a submission, and that's what he did.
And looking ahead to Anderson Silva, do you think Travis Luter is going to be able to take Anderson down and submit him, or how do you see that fight unfolding?
I still give the advantage to Anderson Silva, but I think looking at the middleweights out there, I think Travis Luter is the only one that has a chance of beating him right now. It's going to take not just a great jiu-jitsu guy, but a great wrestling-based jiu-jitsu guy.
Yeah.
Travis Luter is. He needs somebody that can not only get him down, but hold him down. And a lot of jiu-jitsu guys aren't as good at doing that like a wrestler. You know, Travis Luter has good wrestling hips, and I think he can stay on top of Anderson Silva and wear him down a little bit and find a submission.
Last question for you, Scott. I know you're really busy. You're helping James Ervin get ready for his fight this weekend against Hector Ramirez. What's the game plan? We had James on last week, and we discussed this a little bit, but maybe give us, from your perspective, how's James looking, and how are you guys approaching this fight with Ramirez?
Well, the thing with James is he always has great cardio. He's in as good a shape now as he's ever been, and James is just, he's always one punch, one kick, one knee away from winning a fight. So Hector is a great wrestler, and he does have some heavy hands too, but with Hector, you got to survive and, you know, get into the later rounds, and I think James finds a big knockout at, you know, maybe round two or three.
All right. Well, thanks again, Scott, for coming on the program. We appreciate it. Like I said, I know you're extremely busy this week.
Man, anytime. Okay. Anytime. It was talking to you.
Thanks again to Scott Smith, and my apologies, a little bit of a bad cellular connection there. Scott, of course, on the go there, trying to get James Ervin ready for the fight on Saturday, so I apologize for the sound quality. Stay tuned. You're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio. The controversy.
Jeff, last chance to call out Frank Mierjo.
Yeah.
Frank Mier, I want to piece your ass. That's the officer. No, Frank Mier's a stud, man.
The challenges.
Hey, have you heard from Frank Mier yet? No, I haven't heard from Frank Mier yet. What?
Not yet. What
do you think he's going to do? Actually, no, yes, I saw him on Saturday.
Well, you called him out on our show, buddy. Don't you remember?
I think I remember that.
Yeah.
I saw Frank Saturday, which was good luck in his fight.
Forget the 170, Joe. Let's get you back up to 260, 280. Hit the cheeseburgers hard.
Full Contact Fighter Radio. If you can't take the heat, get out of the sauna. Kitchen.
Joining Full Contact Fighter Radio right now is Matt Fiordarosa, coming off a big win this last weekend in the XFO. How are you doing today, Matt?
Doing pretty good. Just hanging out with the team right now. Relaxing.
Now, you took out Chase Baby by just I hope I'm pronouncing that last name correctly, by unanimous decision at XFO 12. From looking at the judges' scores here on the Full Contact Fighter database, Matt, you won 30-27, 30-27. One judge even gave you 30-26. So for those people who maybe haven't read a report about the fighter or didn't get a chance to see it, just give us your thoughts on the fight real quick and a rundown of it.
Yeah, my last fight it was a pretty good fight. I pretty much was in control the whole time, though. Every time, the guy was a real good wrestler. He's a four-time state champ wrestler, and he took me down a couple times. Every time he took me down, he never landed any shots. He was trying to get out of submissions, and I had him in a triangle. Just couldn't finish it. Just slipped out and had him in an armbar. He missed it. I don't know what happened, but. You know, I was beating up on the ground, and then at the end of the second round, I actually had a rear naked in, and I just needed more time with the bell ring, so he got saved by the bell. And then the third round, I could tell he was tired and, you know, didn't really want to come back out to the ring, and they were trying to stall a little bit and get some time for him to catch his breath, and I came out and just beat him up the third round real bad. Yeah, I thought I pretty much controlled the whole fight.
The XFO was held in the Island Lake, Illinois, and there was a lot of fights on the card. You know, the XFO's actually had quite a few shows now, and it's getting a little bit of a buzz, etc. Tell us your thoughts about fighting for the promotion. What's your experience been like?
It's been awesome. It's been when I first started fighting here for the XFO, it was real small amateur show. There's probably 300 people, but just in the past year, it's grown a lot. And every time it's a local crowd, we normally get about 2,000 people. And then going up into last weekend, we had, I think, almost 6,000 or 7,000 people at the Sear Center.
Wow.
It's real cool where all my friends can still come and see, and, you know, there's a lot of good matchups, a lot of good fighters. I mean, UFC veterans, and, you know, my coach is always there, and just a good crowd to be around.
Now, to begin your career, you've got a pro-am combined record of 9-1. Where would you put this win so far in your career, Matt? Does it rank up there, or if not, what would be your biggest win to date, in your opinion?
Yeah, this last fight was a real big win. I think I'm actually 10-1.
Okay.
I think, but it was definitely a real big win. I was real nervous going into it. I wasn't sure what to expect, and a lot of pressure, especially when it's a big event like that, and people finally, you know, get to watch your fight, and there's, you know, your name starts getting out there, and kind of wanted to make an impression and, you know, show what I can do. So I thought this last one was probably one of my most important fights.
And were you at 145 for this fight?
Yeah.
I know we've had Jeff Curran on, and I want to ask you a little bit about your experiences training under Jeff. We've had Jeff on the show a couple times, but he's openly talked and discussed the fact of trying to maybe put on weight and get up to 155, just because the bigger organizations, fights at 155 seem to be more prevalent. For yourself, Matt, is that a possibility, getting up to 155, or are you looking at it with the sport's growth that, you know, there probably could be bantamweight 145-pound divisions in the UFC soon? Or,
you know, I'm very hopeful that it comes around, the 145-pound weight class, because I feel real comfortable there. I feel like I'm a little bit bigger and, you know, able to control myself a little bit more and just put up a better fight at 145. But actually, I'm scheduled to fight at 155 on January 20th for King of the Cage in Canada. And I think that's just to have some flexibility as far as fights go. So if I can get fights at 145 or 155 and in bigger organizations, and see what that can do for me.
Now, the King of the Cage Canada show, is that the one that's going to be in Hull, Quebec?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you know where you're fighting yet, or?
Mark Bocek.
Oh, okay.
I think his name.
Yeah, Mark Bocek, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu instructor.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Well, you fought before, and that kind of leads into a question I was going to ask you about a bit later, but your professional debut was in the Apex organization. You took on Wagner Fabiano. And, of course, one of the promoters that was involved in that was the Freedom Fight promotion, if I'm not mistaken, at the time, who have now teamed up with King of the Cage. But for you, you had a few amateur fights before that, but that fight ended up being televised nationally on a Canadian sports network, TSN. That was my first time I saw you fight. What was that like for you? I mean, you did have some amateur fights underneath your belt, but was there a lot of pressure going in for your professional debut against someone like Wagner Fabiano, a very well-accomplished jiu-jitsu instructor? And he did very well. It was an extremely competitive fight. Did you think you had won the fight, Matt?
You know what? I don't think I had won the fight. You know, kind of afterwards, I knew I lost. But I don't think the win or lose was what really mattered. I think just getting in there and proving to myself that I could fight with, you know, tough guys like Wagner and, you know, hold my ground was more of a win for myself, because after that fight, even having the loss kind of made me get a little bit more serious about training, and, you know, made me really think about what I want to do and how serious I am about mixed martial arts. And so, I mean, it was a big fight. Looking back at it, I would like to do it again now that I have a little bit more experience and a little bit more cage time and know more of a game plan. But, you know, that's how it works out, you know.
Were you aware at the time that it was going to be shown on Canadian's the sports network?
I had an idea. I wasn't really positive like what it all meant, but I knew it was going to be on TV and filmed and everything. I knew it was a real big fight, but yeah, it was kind of cool. It was a little bit bigger than I expected it to be.
Now, of course, Jeff Curran ended up taking on Wagner Fabiano recently and defeating Wagner in another very close competitive fight. Tell us a little bit about your experiences training with Jeff, Matt. How did that come about, and who else do you train with Team Curran?
I started training with Jeff about a year ago. Kind of got sick of wrestling. I've been wrestling for 17 years and switched a couple of colleges just trying to find the right program, and I kind of got sick of dealing with it, so I started training martial arts, and I ended up finding that Jeff was about a half hour from my house, so started coming out there and training with him and getting beat up for a long time, and just felt like it was going good, but Jeff's the man. And I, you know, kind of, we train a couple different places and go to a couple different gyms every once in a while, but I just, nothing really compares to the training that I get at this gym, all well-rounded. We got a real good boxing coach, Doug Mango, who's always helping with my hands, and as far as other guys I train with, Bud Kalazuski is always in there, and he's the IFL star right now. He's just incredible.
Yeah.
And we got a couple good up-and-comers that I train with, too, that are also real good for helping. And then another guy named Nate Moore, the 155-pound fighter, just real good stand-up. So we got a real good gym and a lot of good teammates as far as 145 and 155-pounders go.
Now, you mentioned your wrestling background, and obviously it's quite extensive, 17 years. How easy was that? Was the transition for you to mixed martial arts based on such a strong wrestling background, Matt?
That was like the key to everything, I think. Just the mentality that you get from wrestling, and the drive, and just the whole motivation that I've learned through wrestling made everything, as far as training goes, mixed martial arts a lot easier. It also, just like with jiu-jitsu and stuff like that, it was, a lot of it's real similar. Instead of looking for the pin, now I'm looking for a submission. So it definitely helped a lot.
We were talking about the XFO and getting larger crowds, 6,000, 7,000, talk comparatively to when their first show was 300, 400. Do you think that now, finally, that the Midwest of the States is getting its due as far as the growth of mixed martial arts in that area?
Yeah, I definitely think it's starting. I thought there was going to be a little bit more at the XFO. I thought it was going to get a little bit more draw because we had Alonzo Spellman on the card, too. But I definitely think it's growing big time, and nowadays, every time you go out, there's someone that knows someone who's fighting, you know, so it's, the mixed martial arts is growing pretty good out here.
And for yourself, you've, you know, only been competing in mixed martial arts for a couple of years now. How did your family and friends take to it when you told them you're going to make the transition from wrestling to mixed martial arts?
Everybody was pretty excited. You know, my sisters and my dad and my friends were just enthused about it. Like, they just thought it was the right thing to do. Little cautious at first, but once after the first win came out, you know, they were all about it. The only person that's been kind of iffy about it was my mom, but that's kind of a given. She's just a little nervous about her son, but other than that, everyone thinks it's the right choice, and they know what I can do.
You mentioned that you're going to be fighting up here in Canada in the King of the Cage card in Hull, Quebec in January, but looking beyond that, Matt, what are your aspirations for 2007? What are you hoping to do with your mixed martial arts career in the next little while?
Definitely just keep winning and keep learning. I'm not really sure, like, exactly what's going to happen just because of the weight classes, and I'm still trying to get my name out there, but I definitely just want to start getting into some bigger organizations and keep winning and keep training.
And do you have anything you want to say publicly to Jeff? I mean, I know you can talk to him personally, but he was, you know, it sounds like in a couple of interviews he's kind of dissed the long hair that you got, buddy.
Oh, he better not. They always try to make fun of it. I know deep down they're all jealous. And actually, I know he was trying to grow it out a couple weeks ago, but I don't think he'd get past the point when it got just a little bit too long. So my little message would be stop hating the long hair, because I know they're just jealous.
Yeah, very well could be. All right, Matt Fioradouros, thanks a lot for coming on the program. We appreciate it, and best of luck in your upcoming fights.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
The best coverage of the toughest fighters in the toughest sport can only be found in Full Contact Fighter. For over a decade now, FCF has been bringing mixed martial arts fans across the globe in-depth reporting of the world's greatest sport. From Brazil, Japan, Europe, Canada, and the U.S., FCF brings you all the fighter bios, event reports, training and technique tips any avid MMA fan would want. Every month, 12 times a year, we do it. Full Contact Fighter is your best source for MMA coverage. Pick up the latest edition of the paper by subscribing at www.fcfighter.com or call 516-676-0033. Again, the number 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred new source of the world, and when you call, tell them that FCF Radio sent you. Welcome back to Full Contact Fighter Radio, and Brendan, we're going to wrap up the show here with our UFC 65 picks. I guess we could briefly go over the picks from the Ultimate Finale. We were wrong on a couple, buddy. Travis Luter storming through Patrick Cote. I was kind of surprised, to be honest.
I was surprised you didn't pick Luter, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I was very tempted to go with Luter.
Being an MMA journalist, I thought you would have been more objective.
Actually, I think I was more in line, close to picking. If people want to go and listen to the archived episodes. But no, I mean, and full credit to Travis Luter, excellent game plan. There was at one point, Patrick gave up the underhooks up against the fence, and as soon as he did that, you could tell Travis was going to get him down, and I remember thinking to myself then, right then and there, I was like, wow, this could be over fairly soon if he doesn't get out of this quickly. And when he didn't, it was smooth sailing from there on.
Really surprised. I thought Cote really underperformed, to be quite honest.
Yeah, and then what else? Pete Spratt. I'm just going to quick, because we don't have a lot of time, but I want to go over the picks where we were different. I picked Pete Spratt over Jeremy Jackson, so I was right on that one. We were both wrong on Travis Luter and beating Patrick Cote. Matt, Sarah, we both picked to win. Or no, sorry, we both picked Chris Lytle to win, sorry. We were both wrong on that, so we were totally wrong. And there was one other fight, too, where there was a discrepancy where you picked someone and I picked the other, and I was wrong. So I think we ended up being a tie.
Will this ever be over?
Hopefully soon enough, buddy. Well, let's get into UFC 65 then. I think that's the big event. And when you look at the card, Brendan, this has got to be one of the, in my opinion, although I shouldn't really spot off too much because sometimes I think we all are guilty of, you know, getting too hyped up about cards and not remembering.
Don't hype it up, whatever you do.
Not remembering truly great cards in the past. But as far as in recent memory, when you look at some of the fights on this card, it's pretty stacked.
It is. It looks like a great card. Finally, for a pay-per-view, I can't imagine. I could be setting us up here for the biggest disappointment of all time. But I couldn't imagine how this card could actually be subpar. How the fights could go off subpar. That being said, let's hope that doesn't happen.
Yeah, and you know, I guess we'll just talk about the main three, the big three fights, because we don't have a lot of time because we had three guests on the show, etc. But you know, when you look at the undercard. Some of the fights I'm really looking forward to. I mean, James Irvin versus Hector Ramirez. We had James on the program. I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to Nick Diaz fight again. He's fighting Gleison Thibault, who's only lost twice. So I'm really looking forward to seeing Nick Diaz fight after his impressive performance over Josh Neer. Joe Stevenson taking on Mishima. That's going to be another great fight. Alessio Sequeira, the Legionnaire, fighting Drew McFedries. That's going to be good, too. So all those undercard fights, although some of them have fighters that perhaps people aren't familiar with or haven't seen in the UFC, all those guys have pretty big reputations that precede them coming into the UFC. So all those fights are great.
It's going to be a real barn burner, I think.
So let's get into the big three then, and we'll do a little bit of analysis. Brendan Vera versus Frank Mir. Brendan Vera, of course, somewhat being groomed. I think a lot of people are guessing he's being groomed as the next contender as far as the heavyweight division goes. Jack Congo losing to Carmelo Marrero. Some people thought the UFC was perhaps looking at Congo to be a guy who might have a shot coming up. And certainly Brandon Vera is still very much in the picture, taking on Frank Mir, the former champ. Brendan, who are you picking in this fight?
I would think that Mir, if he came in shape, would be a tough fight for Vera, because I think he has the grappling acumen to take him out on the ground, but I'd say it's tough to pick. It's tough to pick for Mir because it's the same old story every time. You know, like his camp says, oh, he's in great shape, da 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 da, da, and then he comes in, and he doesn't look like he's in really great shape, and it doesn't look like he's, you know, committed. He was committed to his training regiment. At the same time, that being said, that being said, it's tough to pick against him if he does come in shape, because he's got the tools to take out Vera. But fool me once, shame on me, or you fool me twice, shame on me. So I got to go with Vera on this one.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with Vera as well. You know, he doesn't have necessarily as much credentials in the jiu-jitsu aspect as Frank Mir. I believe Brandon Vera's got a brown belt, or maybe he did get his black belt recently. But he's got a strong wrestling background. He's well-decorated jiu-jitsu fighter as well. I mean, he's got a huge reputation that preceded him coming into the UFC. And then, of course, he's got the great stand-up capabilities, which I think are far better than Frank Mir's, or far better than anything Frank Mir has demonstrated up until this point.
Yeah.
And then, as you mentioned, there's the question marks about Frank Mir's conditioning, his leg. He's never looked particularly good since coming back from the motorbike accident. So I think that really you have to go with Brandon Vera, and I think this fight will probably end in a kind of TKO situation. I can't see Vera's wrestling is supposed to be very good too, and I can't see him getting taken down by Frank Mir, to be honest. So unless
if Mir doesn't take him down immediately in the first round, if Mir gets tired at all in this fight, then he's done for, because he can't survive. I don't think he can survive Vera stand up if he's tired, and if he's tired, he's not going to be able to take him down. So that will be it.
Yeah, I agree, and I just don't. To be honest, I just can't see him taking Vera down. I think the only way he'll be able to get his fight to the ground is if he pulls guard in that kind of scenario, and I think Vera will be good enough to stay out of any submissions and pound out a victory. So I'm going to go with Vera, and to me, this fight, I don't see it going the distance at all. I think this probably will be stopped first, second round.
Yeah, I can't see it going past the second round, regardless. If Mir doesn't finish him in the first, then I don't think it's going to happen.
The next fight, for the UFC heavyweight division, which doesn't get a lot of press, and people always, it seems like the only time we discuss it, people talk about the lack of depth in the heavyweight division. But when you look at this matchup for the heavyweight title, I think this fight is somewhat being overlooked by people. Of course, somewhat, clearly overshadowed by George St. Pierre versus Matt Hughes, which is a huge, huge fight in both countries. Up here in Canada, there's a lot of people talking about this fight. So, I mean, I understand it's overlooked, but I'm really excited. I think it's a very, very compelling matchup.
Yeah, I think it will be interesting. Did you happen to see the preview show on Spike?
I didn't see the preview show. I saw are you talking about the George St. Pierre Matthews interview on Ultimate
no,
Finale?
I can't remember what they call these things. So, upcoming UFC or whatever show it's called.
No, I didn't see it.
Yeah, it featured Munson. Months in training at this, it was funny. He walked up to a doorway, and it said, such and such training center in Florida. You expect it to be like high tech, kind of, Rocky III or Rocky IV type of things, where they have computers hooked up to his brain and things like that. So he walks up to this place, and he talks about how happy he is to be training with these guys, because they're such sports specific trainers, and then. His training regiment I'm not making fun, but it was funny to watch, because they attach him up to a bunch of bungees and then have this 8-foot pole with a boxing glove on the end that's made to represent the Silva's reach, and they're poking that in his face, and he's bungeeing against it and working in a chute. Then they take him outside, and he flips a gigantic tractor tire across the parking lot.
Nice.
And then he pushes an SUV around, so. It was pretty interesting watching this.
Maybe they'll be entering a World's Strongest Man competition after the.
Well, it reminded me a lot of that. It was pretty funny, except for the gigantic pole, which was fairly high tech.
Well,
I
mean,
great, his training looks unbelievable.
Yeah, he if the conditioning's there, and I know Dennis King, we had him on in his interview. He mentioned how Jeff has been working on his conditioning, and a lot of people are really keying on that, it seems, is one of the deciding factors. Not so much whether or not Munson can take Sylvia down, but whether or not Jeff Munson comes in with the conditioning to go to go 3, 4, 5 rounds. And Tim Sylvia has obviously done it in the past, and for such a big guy, has shown amazing conditioning, really, and I think sometimes people overlook that. I don't know, man. Clearly this is a very obvious way to decide the fight. Jeff Munson takes it to the ground, he's going to win. If Sylvia keeps it standing, he'll probably win.
I think Munson has a good shot, and the only way you're going to beat Tim Sylvia is by outworking him, because I think he loves wearing that belt by now. It's probably so disgustingly filthy from all the different greasy places that he's taken it, and like he can't actually give it back. So you know that he's going to be working on keeping it, and the only way you're going to beat him is to outwork him, and that's not in the ring, but outwork him in training. And it looks like Munson's, you know, done the necessary work in order to be able to do that. Now, everyone sees it as a very straightforward fight, you know, can Munson take him down? And I can't see, to be quite honest, I can't see him not taking Sylvia down. Traditionally, Sylvia's gone down by getting knocked down. I don't see Munson doing that, but I can't see Sylvia having a defense for just basically a guy that stocky and compact bull rushing him and taking him down against the cage.
These fights are hard for me to predict because you're absolutely right. I mean, Sylvia, the only times I can recall him being put down is via a punch. And so none of his previous fights in recent memory have people really tried to go for the shot, or except maybe Arlovski did once or twice in their fights. I don't even think he did. So it's hard to say. Everyone, you know, the Miletic camp say that Tim Sylvia's got great takedown defense. I'm going to go out on a limb, and I'm going to take Munson in this fight. I just think that he'll be able to get the fight to the ground, and if he does, he should be able to win it. But it's a toss up. I would not be betting money on this fight if I was a betting man, because it's a hard one to predict.
Yeah, I'm actually going to go with Munson too. Just keeping with my month of birthday presents to myself, and going with the heart, not the head. I'm going to go with Munson as well. And I think, you know, the other big guys, really really big guys, and there's only one or two that you can think of that are as big as Sylvia have been guys who have been notoriously taken down, like Sammy Shields comes to mind, you know. And I think one of the things that's being overlooked about this is everyone saying, oh, Munson's got this fantastic reach, and or Sylvia's got this fantastic reach. But I think the compact nature of the compact frame of Munson is beneficial for him in this fight, because if he's hunkering down and shooting at Sylvia's legs, Sylvia's got a long way to throw punches from 6'9" or whatever he is down to, you know, 4 feet. So, I'm just thinking of Jeff Munson bent over, So I think that'll be the question, is what's that gonna look like, you know? And I imagine there's lots of short, stocky, compact guys for him to work with, and it'll be interesting to see, you know, who did the training and who has the better game plan coming in. And who knows, maybe Munson has, maybe Munson's going to pull some crazy stand-up out of the hat and work over Sylvia's abdomen like it's never been worked over before.
Yeah, it's possible, but I think that, you know, sometimes you got to listen to what people are saying as far as camps go, and I think sometimes there's, both Dean Thomas and Dennis Kane kind of made some remarks about how Jeff is really working on a stand-up, and he's going to surprise Tim in that sense. And sometimes I just become suspicious of the fact you just kind of have to wonder if it's just, you know, they know that sometimes the word gets around to these guys that people are saying that. I just don't see it. I mean, the idea that he's going to stand and try to trade with Sylvia just seems, you know, doesn't make sense to me, unless he's doing it just to purely set up a shot. And of course, he's going to work on a stand-up to be able to endure a little bit. I mean, you can't, in this day of mixed martial arts, you can't just walk in and have no stand-up and expect to get a guy to the ground. I mean, that's not going to happen anymore. So you have to have capable stand-up capabilities to get that opportunity to take it to the ground. And whether or not Jeff has developed that enough, we'll see, but I think he probably has, and I think he's going to be the champ. Matt Hughes versus George St. Pierre, this is the big one. I think I've mentioned this on the program before, but there's only certain cards. I mean, UFC is really doing growing leaps and bounds as far as popularity up here in Canada, and, you know, it's sort of in my circles, whether it's with my other job, etc. Other people do know I also work with mixed martial arts, and this fight, man, I gotta tell you, a lot of people talking about this fight, coming up to me, hey, you know, who are you picking, really excited, which bars are showing the fight, etc. So there's a lot of hype up here, and I'm getting, you know, I'm really excited about it too.
My wife was just in Arizona, and she was driving down the interstate, and there was a billboard with this fight on it.
Yeah.
So we don't see things like that up here, but, you know, apparently in the States, they're just popping this like crazy as well.
Well, when I was in Seattle, actually, I saw a sign for BJ Penn, Matt Hughes, and yeah, it was the same reaction. I was like, holy cow, you know, you don't see that in Canada, but...
Because if you think after this, what's the next what's the next big thing coming down the pipe for the UFC? I guess.
Well, Liddell Ortiz.
Yeah, if anyone's interested in that, Liddell Ortiz. But
I think people are plenty interested, man.
Yeah.
Well, let's not get ahead of ourselves, buddy. You know.
But are the MMA sophisticates interested?
I think there is a level of interest there. I don't think it's not to the point where it was for their first fight, but I think people are genuinely excited. But anyways, here you go again. You always try to change the topic. Let's stay on the course. Stay the course. Cut and run.
I'm sorry.
Matthews versus George St. Pierre. Who are you picking? I know you're going to pick George St. Pierre.
Yeah. Because he's going to win, I think.
Okay, and why do you think that is?
And this is a head-heart pick. Very rare, coincidental head-heart pick. Heart because I like GSP, and head because I think that Hughes is a notorious slow starter. I think if St. Pierre pushes the pace, he could put him away in a way that Penn couldn't. But I think in Penn's fight, everybody says he didn't want to go hurt, whatever. But if I think St. Pierre can push the pace in a way that Penn can't, didn't in the first fight in terms of just overwhelming strength and wrestling. And I think that Hughes is such a notorious slow starter that I don't think he can keep up. I actually am going to predict a George St. Pierre victory in round number one.
Oh, wow. Wow. Yeah, this one is tough for me. I don't do the head heart corny stuff like you do. But
you don't like to think that you do.
I do the head gut. See, buddy, I do the head gut.
Heart and gut are the same, Kelsey.
No, it's not.
They're very intricately connected.
It's not the same thing, and I'll tell you why.
Okay.
My head says I'm going to go with George St. Pierre, and I base that on the fact, if you look at the prior performances, if you look at the way George St. Pierre performed against BJ Penn, Sean Sherk, down the list of all of the contenders, he did very well. In fact, almost did better than Matt Hughes did against some of the comparatively same fighters, like Frank Trigg comes to mind, etc. BJ Penn, you know, Matt Hughes said that he thought that BJ Penn exposed some of George St. Pierre's weaknesses. Maybe, and to an extent with the stand-up, I'd agree with that statement. But George St. Pierre also beat BJ Penn. It was a close fight, and Matt Hughes obviously beat him as well. But he was, in my opinion, was doing far worse against BJ Penn up until BJ got hurt. So based on that, I'm going to go with George St. Pierre. I think his stand-up's better than Matt Hughes. I don't think Matt's going to be able to take him down. I think George St. Pierre's his wrestling and strength is going to be there to... I mean, Matt might be able to get him down. I shouldn't say he won't be, but I think that... I'm going to go with George St. Pierre, but there's that gut thing. There's that gut where... And remember last time you ridiculed me for saying this, but remember, I went with my gut last time, and I was proven right. And I was very prophetic in that sense. There's something saying in my gut that Matt Hughes is going to win, man. I don't know why, but there's just something about it. This, you know, the guy just shows such mental strength and toughness in all these kind of situations that there's part of me that wants to say, you know what, I think Matt Hughes is going to be in trouble again, similarly to several other times, and he just always seems to win.
Yeah, if there's one thing that can be said for Hughes is that he wins. I'm not crazy about his opponents that he's had victories over. I think St. Pierre's had the tougher road to get here to where he is right now.
I don't know how you say that. They pretty much fought they've had the same opponent list.
Of course, BJ. Like, I think the biggest win of Hughes' life was his last win. And his wins before that were, for me, unremarkable. That being said, I think probably what is informing your gut of this is the idea that maybe Hughes is in St. Pierre's head.
Yeah.
And it almost looks like that if you look at it from, if you look at the interactions they've had on TV and stuff like that. I don't think people, I think people underestimate the way that Canadians are, and that's a very Canadian thing, is to be very peacemaking and, not really shit-talking and stuff like that. So I think people are mistaking that. St. Pierre's almost submissive attitude, and I think Hughes is mistaking that as well for subservience. So just the typical comment that he made, one of the comments that he made on the preliminary show was, St. Pierre came in and trash talked him after the last his last fight and said he wasn't impressed. First of all, Hughes, at the same time, criticizes him for doing that and saying that he didn't think he was that kind of guy, and then makes fun of him and ridicules him for apologizing afterwards in the locker room. He said something like, yeah, he came into the locker room like an 8-year-old and apologized to me. So I think that just demonstrates, Hughes' character, and he's I think Matt Serra pinned it best, he's like that kind of like bully jock. But I don't think I don't think you can get in Hughes' head, number one. I don't think he's in St. Pierre's head, and I think that's what your gut is telling you.
Well, I'd like to, you're regaling Canadian behavior, etc. I'd like to think that's true most of the time, but I think if you talk to some people who have to walk down Gravel Street here in Vancouver on a Saturday night, or White Ave on Edmonton on a Saturday night, not necessarily think that we're all peacemakers. But I'm going to go with George St. Pierre. I think he is going to win, but I wouldn't. Again, I know it sounds like I'm scared to make a bold prediction, but I wouldn't want to bet money on this fight either.
No, heck no. No, I think Hughes is he's rock solid mentally. He has an unshakable confidence in himself, and I guess that's what you need to be a fighter. But I think that unshakable confidence will be exposed as maybe not as unshakable as he thought.
All right, buddy. Well, you enjoy the fights. I know you will.
And, no, I won't actually. It makes me sick thinking about them right now.
Okay, well, have a good weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.
You too, Kelsey. Where are you going to watch the fights? Are you going to find some sleazy tavern?
No, I'm just going to watch it here in my safe comfort of my own home.
Come on. Can't you find some greasy strip club or hobo tavern like you usually drink in to watch this thing?
I could, but I'm kind of a hermit, so I like just to watch the fights with myself and maybe a couple friends, my girlfriend, but I just I try to avoid bars, etc., when I'm watching the fights.
I understand.
Yeah.
All right, Kelsey, and once again, do not let the bed bugs bite.
I will.